Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I've Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. I think I know the answer to this, Samantha, but I shall ask this question anyway. Did you ever watch any after-school specials, or were there things on PBS that you were into growing up?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely one of those that watched Captain Kangaroo for a little while. Zoobly-Doo. Do you remember that?
Zoobly-Doo? No.
Zoobly-Doo.
Zoboomafoo?
No.
That's a fun name.
Oh, no, that's not how you say it. It's Zoobly-Zoo.
I like Zoobly-Doo.
But it's Ben Vereen, who dresses like a cat. And they're all dressed up in some kind of like costume. I'll send you a picture.
Please.
And I used to love it. It came out in 1986, but I watched that as well. Ben Vereen, loved him. Such a great guy. To me, he's right up there with LeVar Burton, which I also watched Reading Rainbow, of that. I did watch a few after school specials, but you also have to remember, I didn't have anything but more than like four channels. And that included CBS, ABC, PBS. That's it. We couldn't even get NBC. Like, it was too out of range for us. So those are the three channels that I had. And so I would also watch any of the PBS specials. Like, that's where I watched Anne of Green Gables, of course.
Yeah, I was in a very similar situation. We got those channels, and then occasionally we would get NBC or TBS, and every now and then Channel 34, which was The Box, which is a music video station, but you had to put your hand on the TV and then hold your other arm up.
Yep, been there. Remember those moments.
But I loved PBS. I didn't watch much in the way of after-school specials necessarily, but I loved Zoom and Wishbone and Reading Rainbow and Arthur, which is why one of the reasons why this has been on my mind, because Arthur has been canceled after very, like, 20-plus years.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah. Also, me and my friends spent a long time trying to remember without the internet who was gay on that show, and it was Mr. Ratburn. Mr. Ratburn got married to a man. And I even had the Arthur video game. I absolutely loved it. I remember coming home and getting home from school and watching that. But it's something else that's been on my mind too, because here in the US, at least, there's a lot of conversation around going back to school and what that's going to look like when you've got a pandemic and a new variant that's really, really contagious and children. So I've just been thinking about this and kind of feeling nostalgic for my days of watching these shows on PBS and being so excited for them. So please enjoy this classic episode.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we are talking about after-school specials today because you know what? It's school time. And for some of you, it might be after school. And I really personally, I just wanted to know about after school specials, because in my brain, they are these kitschy, feel good, lesson teaching, imparting little videos that we watch now from time to time and say, huh, oh, look at Scott Baio. He's too drunk.
I don't know that all of them were feel-good videos, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, like Scott Baio in The Boy Who Drank Too Much was, you know, it was pretty tough to watch because he did get too drunk.
Or there was the one, what was the name of the one where he, like, got all whacked out on drugs and fell in the water or something?
I think you are referring to Stoned, when Scott Baio smokes pot at school and gets really stoned. Not to be confused, though, with High School Narc.
Oh.
Which is not the star of Scott Baio, but it does deal with marijuana in school.
Yeah, Scott Baio. A lot of people got their start from these things.
Mm-hmm.
Christy McNichol, Rob Lowe and his jaw.
Helen Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
There's one very famous after-school special. I don't know the title of it, but it involves Helen Hunt trying angel dust, a.k.a. PCP, and then jumping through a window. Cautionary tale, these. So, before this turns into me just pretending to be YouTube and just recounting clips of after-school specials, we are talking specifically about ABC after-school specials, although CBS also had their form of after-school specials. HBO even did similar kinds of after-school specials. But they ran on ABC from 1972 to 1995. It was the first network to do this. And the very first after-school special was actually a Hanna-Barbera animated feature.
Yeah, about fictional birds.
Yeah, it was called Last of the Curlews. And it was about conservation. It kind of reminded me of Dr. Seuss's The Lorax.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about these birds called the curlews, and it won an Emmy in 1973 for outstanding achievement in children's programming.
My father would just say it was a liberal agenda movie.
It was a liberal agenda
because
movie.
Because it taught kids empathy, and they learned about ecology and environmental problems. I mean, he's a man who can't sit through WALL-E.
Hippies.
Yeah.
Yeah, after school specials, even though we might snicker at them now a little bit because they might seem a little bit cheesy, perhaps through our now 90210 jaded lens, they would go on over their lifespan to garner 18 daytime Emmys, 3 blue ribbons at the American Film Festival, and a Peabody Award.
So you would think that, you know, having won all these awards, that they must have been really popular from the get-go. But according to producer Martin Taze, who did a lot of these episodes, most of the episodes, advertisers were not excited about these shows. They did kind of touch on a lot of racy topics, and they were a radical departure from a lot of the TV shows that were on at the time. But critics loved them. They loved this series, and they actually pressured ABC affiliates to take it more seriously.
Well, yeah, because this was the first time that a network devoted that kind of primetime specifically to teenagers. Because if we look at TV when this is going on, remember they were launched in 1972. We have Happy Days comes on air in 74. 1968, Mr. Rogers. 69, Sesame Street comes around. 73, we got Schoolhouse Rock. And then, because it's awesome, we must mention it, 1983, Reading Rainbow.
Yeah.
Hello.
God, I love that.
Should do an episode just on Reading
we
Rainbow.
We should.
But those were all targeted toward younger audiences. Mm-hmm. So the after-school specials were really an attempt to educate, have this, it's edutainment, toward teens. And so they did tackle those tough topics like teen and adult alcoholism, Scott Baio, homosexuality, teen pregnancy, drug abuse, domestic violence, STDs, teen suicide, child molestation, also divorce, such as one of my favorite after-school specials, My Dad Lives in a Downtown Hotel, which happens when Beau Bridges and his wife get divorced and Billy, their child, has to go visit Beau Bridges in a downtown hotel.
Huh. Yes. Well, in an episode of NPR's On the Media, which aired in June 2005, they took a look at these wonderful episodes of learning. And they quoted Chicago Tribune media writer Maureen Ryan, who said that it just seemed like there was much more of an air of exploration in terms of topics that might now today be considered inappropriate for kids or young adults. Yeah, I feel like parents are very sensitive about what their kids watch. But these were learning tools. And they point out that while these after-school specials may have been melodramatic, they acknowledge that there was more to adolescence than sock hops of happy days.
Yeah, these were happening in an interesting time because they're sort of sandwiched between, on the one side, this moral panic about television becoming more sexualized and violent. There were all of these stories in like Time Magazine and Newsweek talking about connections between violence on television and rising rates of teenage violence, and also concerns fueled by the Cold War about whether or not kids were being adequately educated, this new and younger generation. But then on the other side, you do have the opening up of, it's the swinging 70s. So you have the publication in 1970 of Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Too Afraid to Ask. 2 years later, The Joy of Sex comes out. 1973, Our Bodies, Ourselves. You have drug culture going on. So you have sandwiched in the middle of this, these after-school specials that were trying to appease the moral panic, the need for, a desire for education on the boob tube that's coming down from parents, and also addressing these very real issues that teens are confronting.
Yeah, and this is referred to as the turn to relevance for TV, because you have commercial TV that people are all up in arms about. It's all sexy times and violence, but it's becoming more socially conscious to sort of become an educational tool for young people. And this is all talked about in a study from Julie Ellman in 2010, talking about how adolescence was sort of redefined during this time as just a period in your life, to all of a sudden now it's something to overcome. It's a disability you have to get over.
Well, and you also have to take into account the changing family dynamics that were going on as well, with more mothers working outside the home. So you have all of these latchkey kids. All of a sudden, you've got divorce on the rise. And again, because of the lack of supervision, perhaps from both parents working, you have youth TV intake becoming less supervised. So you mentioned producer Martin Toss. He decided with these after-school specials that he would draw from popular adolescent literature and keep tabs on Publishers Weekly to essentially see what the kids were reading, and then format the shows similarly or even directly from these young adult novels. For instance, Francine Pascal, who wrote the Sweet Valley High series, she had a novel, The Hand-Me-Down Kid, turned into an after-school special in 1983. And it's all about how a younger sibling is sick of getting hand-me-downs, so she steals her sister's bike. But then, of course, that bike gets stolen. Lesson learned about stealing.
Well, then what happens?
And then I guess she's fine with taking hand-me-downs. I have a feeling at the end she gets a new outfit, because generally there is some kind of need that's satisfied, you know, and the kid feels okay at
yeah.
the end.
Well, a lot of one of the points that they bring up about this whole series is that there aren't miracles in these shows, that oftentimes when these horrible things happen, whether it's, oh, my God, I don't get a new outfit, or whoops, I got my girlfriend pregnant. Often these are things that the kids themselves have to deal with and resolve. And they don't just like magically, you know, like an episode in Full House, just magically get resolved in 30 minutes.
Right. They have to undergo some tough circumstances in order to reach the other side. And a lot of it is about, yeah, the kind of the pluckiness of youth and having to overcome peer pressure or just general loneliness and angst. Although Ellman, whose thesis we've cited, did take issue with how gender shakes out a lot of times in the after-school specials. She points out that topics are often focused around male protagonists to begin with, because of the notion that girls are going to watch something about boys, but not vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, if a female protagonist does have a problem, it usually required a male love interest to come along who probably had already dealt with a similar kind of issue to guide her to the solution. Whereas when the tables were turned and you have a boy who's trying to overcome something, it's the girls who are still kind of relegated to the side just to be caretakers, but not necessarily catalysts for change.
Yeah, a lot of her study does touch on divisions of gender and able-bodiedness and what that means as far as heteronormativity and traditional masculinity and femininity.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Yeah, she essentially makes the point that able-bodiedness is used as a kind of symbol for heteronormativity, because mm-hmm. you have this arc of, you start out with some kind of handicap and a lack of love interest, and as someone will overcome some kind of disability, then the love interest will come along, so you have them able-bodied and hooked up by the end, sort of linking those two things together.
Yeah, she calls this a rehabilitative approach in representing teen problems and addressing teen viewers, and really, like I mentioned earlier, talks about overcoming disability and defines adolescence as you're not being able-bodied. You might even kind of have a disability. And so this whole thing becomes a developmental stage defined by exposure to and weathering of the dysfunction.
And speaking of heteronormativity, sexuality was something that did come up in a number of after-school specials, and there were some that dealt specifically with teens coming out. But Reese over at autostraddle.com talks about the 1986 HBO/Canadian Cable Company special, The Truth About Alex, it's not an ABC after-school special, but it's in the same vein of these after-school specials. And again, starring Scott Baio. I love that this episode could just be co-titled Scott Baio.
The Rise of Scott Baio.
Yes. And she writes, for many young homosexuals, The Truth About Alex was the first time they saw themselves on screen, and that was profound enough and positive. But the real lesson of the film hides behind the ostensibly decent portrayal, because outside of those things, the survival of coming out of the closet and an eventual acceptance from a handful of family and friends, the life of a gay person was seen as a relentless and destructive battle against the world. If you come out, be prepared for everything to unravel around you. So it is sort of, it's a positive, but still with these negative detractors of saying, hey, be brave, young person, and be who you are, but still be ready for a lifetime of hell.
Exactly. She goes on to cite some episodes that focus particularly on young gay people in high school. There's 1987 CBS school break special, What If I'm Gay?, where friends, this guy's friends find his gay porn collection. It ended up being nominated for 3 daytime Emmys and actually won one. In 1993, there was another CBS episode called Other Mothers, and Meredith Baxter was one of the mothers, and she ended up coming out years later. That was recently, right? That was just like 2 years ago or something?
Other Mothers was in 1993. Oh, when she came out. Oh, I want to say it was, 2003.
And then there was 1994, an HBO episode called More Than Friends, The Coming Out of Heidi Leiter. I think that's how it's pronounced. But yeah, so there was a focus on gay and lesbian students. But like Kristen said, there was still the downside of you have a lot of junk to deal with.
Well, it was similar too to how sex was dealt with, especially when it comes to STDs and unintended pregnancies, because this is going back to Ellman's paper in Television and New Media. She talks about how teen sex was depicted a lot, but STDs were always depicted as some kind of punishment, a moral punishment for promiscuity, as was accidental pregnancy a lot of times, saying like, hey, well, you know, you can do this, but if you aren't, 100% monogamous, you're going to get a horrible STD and terrible things will rain down upon you.
Yeah, this is part of what she called medicalized entertainment, which was a style of literary / televisual narratives that emerged around this time to basically transmit images of medical knowledge and often disability for public consumption. So here you've got this health issue. Let's teach you about it in kind of an entertaining way so that you'll know more about it and hopefully avoid it.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, considering the time that these were on the air and considering how new it was and how revolutionary it was that this was the first time that the teen experience was really being valued and portrayed on television, I think that you have to take after school specials as, I don't know, I think that they were a good thing because mm-hmm. they did portray all of these different issues, even though they might seem kind of kitschy now. Not the issues themselves, but how they came across. And it would be interesting to see, like, if obviously after school specials don't really exist today in the same format, but how we might deal with them differently. But I guess maybe we don't need after school specials anymore because a lot of these issues have been mainstreamed into primetime dramas or dramedies, comedies like Glee. You have things like 90210 going back in time a little bit, which came out first in October of 1990. You have the OC, Dawson's Creek, all this other stuff where they interweave these kinds of issues into incredibly dramatic plot lines.
Yeah, Dawson's Creek, you learn that the brunette is always the one that you trust. You don't ever trust the new blonde who comes to town. And I also think a really good thing about these episodes, like Kristen said, even though they're a little cheesy, they do feature a lot of different kinds of people, a lot of different young people of different ethnic backgrounds, ages, family situations. And Ellman says that this whole imagined coming of age as a process of developing liberal individualism by offering lessons in tolerance. So showing different types of people and what they go through instead of just maybe your run-of-the-mill Happy Days cast.
Yeah, and I think one of the great things, too, about after-school specials as opposed to, or in comparison to, the kinds of teen dramas that we see on TV today, is that, especially when it comes to their economic backgrounds, it was a lot of lower middle class, you know, everyday kids just going through life, whereas a lot of times now what we see, you turn on Gossip Girl and it's all, you know, fabulously wealthy kids, even the poorest among them is clearly, obviously, incredibly wealthy. And so a lot of it's more like stylized, and even the middle class is portrayed to be like far above the actual living standards of the current middle class.
Yeah. Well, one thing that definitely was not stylized at all is a show that I watched in my eighth grade. I guess it was maybe our break period or something. And that's Degrassi Junior High.
Yeah. If there were, I mean, I gotta say that in homeschool, I did not watch Degrassi. Mm-hmm. I've heard about Degrassi for a while. Last year, in fact, a friend of mine who really has a love for 80s and 90s culture asked me about it. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I've just never seen it. And she was like, you gotta watch Degrassi.
Which version did you watch? Because there's like 50.
I started from the beginning with Degrassi sweet. Junior High. And Caroline, I didn't leave my room for a few days because I got...
They're amazing.
I got hooked. I was 26 years old on a Degrassi Junior High marathon.
Yeah, well, they are. I just remember thinking when I was watching them in class, like, this is so stupid, right, guys? This is so... Wow, I can't believe they're actually talking about this. Wow.
Yeah, they hit all of the kinds of issues that after school specials did, but it was somehow better. I feel like because they just pulled in actual kids from the neighborhood, like the clothes that they wear were clothes from their closet.
Mm-hmm.
And Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High ran on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC, from 1987 to 1991. And then there's Degrassi The Next Generation.
Not to be confused with Star Trek.
Correct. That started in 2001. But you found some differences as to, specifically because it was broadcast in Canada, about why they could tackle some of the issues that they did more freely.
Yeah, well, I guess I never thought about the differences between Canada and the U.S. as far as, like, cultural taboos and things like that, because I just don't think of our countries as that different, maybe socially, but maybe they are.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
But yeah, Linda Shuler, who's the producer, said that Degrassi needed to be more entertaining than an after-school special because it was all about finding the authenticity of these characters' voices and emotions, about really tackling issues that kids were talking about. And that came into play when they had an episode about abortion, because there wasn't really an issue in Canada about airing this episode. It was like, okay, well, this is something that kids are worried about. This is something that happens in society. Let's talk about it. But it was actually pulled in the U.S. because the network The Inn, I don't recall this network or anything, but The Inn actually refused to air the abortion episode. And so the New York Times ended up writing a piece on it like, ooh, Degrassi's tackling society's last taboo. And Shuler's response to that was basically like, well, it's not really our last taboo. It's just a different national context. And so there's this book called Programming Reality Perspectives on English and Canadian Television that said that Degrassi went places that American TV was afraid to go, and that national context really does affect what type of stories can be told on TV.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, if it's a contest between ABC school specials versus Degrassi, I mean, hands down, it's Degrassi. Anyone who out there who's not watched, this might get me on another Degrassi kick. I'm just saying.
You've got to go home right now and watch it.
Yeah.
Well, there's also the issues. We haven't really talked about girls and feminism and how that's presented on these shows. Kristen Pike, in 2011 for an essay in Girlhood Studies, which is a journal, she did an analysis of episodes featuring tomboys and explored how these after-school specials circulated ideas of feminism and femininity to young viewers. And her study demonstrates how these after-school specials targeted girls through images of female progress and independence while simultaneously cautioning them about the dangers of women's lib. So it's the same kind of thing that we talked about when they featured gay students on these episodes. It's like, okay, yeah, go be yourself. Go be a strong woman, a strong young woman. But you're kind of a tomboy and you're different and
yeah,
there could be consequences.
Be prepared.
Yeah, and she said that the series trend of taming tomboys, so like, ooh, you're a tomboy, but now you found a love interest, so everything is better. It's actually connected to the backlash against women and gay rights movements. So did this help TV? Hurt TV? Elman in her study said that it rehabilitated TV's image, that now kids have something productive to watch, more constructive. You know, maybe portraying sexual issues as productive.
Sure, but at the same time, though, I feel like there was somewhat of a drop-off because you transition from after-school specials really into 90210 is the biggest thing to pick up from that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm curious to hear what other people who might have watched more after school specials at the time when they were airing, and parents today who are concerned about TV programming, what they think about it. And I don't know, maybe if it's a moot point that we shouldn't be so concerned about like what kind of education kids are receiving from television rather than, you know, education that they are receiving from school and books and other outlets like podcasts. but I'm glad that we took this look inside of after school specials.
Inside of Scott Baio's career.
Yes. Cause I didn't know where they came from. Mm-hmm. So that's where, and they're not from a stork. They are from the brains of ABC and producer Martin Toss.
Yeah.
So there we go. And I think, you know, folks out there, if you would like an episode completely devoted to Degrassi, I wouldn't be remiss, but
would have to go back and do a lot of homework.
Yeah, but
maybe just go watch it on your own.
Let us know if you want that, though. We could do it. I really just want an excuse to watch more Degrassi, because I still haven't seen The Next Generation. I digress. So, any after-school special letters you have to send our way, momstuff@discovery.com is where you can send them. Now, before we get into listener letters, I do have a quick message for you from Netflix, which is partially responsible for bringing you this episode of Stuff Mom Never Told You. And it is the perfect time to talk about Netflix because we are talking about after-school specials. We've ticked off a number of our favorites. And if you would, for instance, like to take a trip back in TV time and watch some of the ABC after school specials, you can watch on Netflix, for instance, the 1981 to 1982 after school specials edition, which features a young Rob Lowe in the after school special, A Matter of Time. Now, if you want to find out A Matter of Time for what and what young Rob Lowe is doing in that after school special, all you need to do is go to Netflix.com because as a new Netflix member and a Stuff Mom Never Told You listener, you can get a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to Netflix.com/mom and sign up and be sure to use that URL so that they know that Caroline and I sent you. Now, this free 30-day trial is not going to be around forever, so do not delay. Head on over to Netflix.com/mom for that free 30-day trial membership. Now, back to our listener letters. We've got a letter here from Bree talking about our episode on self-harm, and she says she's been self-harming off and on for about 10 years, and talks about the addiction factor. And I just wanted to read a couple of things in her letter because we don't have time to read the entire thing. She says, I do agree that the subject is not often talked about because people just think it is an adolescent / teen white girl problem and that eventually they will grow out of it. Being an African-American woman, I was often told that this was a white problem and that I should just stop because black people don't cut themselves. Yes, people actually say these things. Also, a lot of people do not believe men harm themselves, but that's also true. I kept quiet about my cutting for almost a year until I confided in a friend, and it all went down from there. Soon it seemed that all of my friends were harming themselves in some ways, and we were all on a path of toward death. Thankfully, most of them grew out of it and have found other ways to cope when they're feeling down. So she also offers some pointers to help treat people who are cutting if someone is concerned. She says, don't ever take or throw away or hide a person's personal cutting tools, boxes, etc. Doing this seems helpful, but it can break the trust you have with this person, and it could make the person who is cutting find something quick and really sharp to use at the moment. And in their frantic state, they could not be as careful, and it could end up badly. Also, don't shame them or make them feel like they're worthless. It will be really hard at first, and sometimes you might say something you regret, but just take some deep breaths and try to focus on the main point. Remember that everyone is different. Don't treat the person as if they were someone you see on TV or read in a book. Remember that you can't force anyone to stop harming themselves. They have to want to stop in order to progress. All that a person can really do is be supportive and know that you are thinking about them and you want them to get better. So thanks to Bree for that insight.
And I have a letter from Kristen about our Soda Pop cast. Hey. She says, I grew up in Palmer, Alaska, a smaller city north of Anchorage. In Alaska, we have many villages, which we call the bush, that are not connected to the rest of Alaska by roads and are therefore only acceptable by airplane or float plane, boat, snow machine, and or dog sled. In these villages, everything is much, much more expensive. In 2008, I remember a gallon of gas hitting $12. I remember learning that in many bush villages, babies, children, and young adults are beginning to experience very serious dental problems because healthy drinks such as water and milk are very expensive, but unhealthy drinks, mostly soda, are affordable for women with children. These mothers put soda in bottles for their babies, and their children grew up drinking soda as the main or even only daily drink that contributes not only to problems you mentioned in the podcast, including weight gain and diabetes, but also major dental problems. Imagine the cavities a baby would develop if it drinks solely sugared soda while teething. I'm not sure how big of a problem this continues to be in the bush, but it's an image that has always stuck with me and I wanted to share. So thank you for that information, Kristen.
And thanks to everyone who's written in. MomStuff@discovery.com is where you can send all of your after-school special letters and any other letters on your mind. And also head over to Facebook. Let us know. Post a YouTube video of your favorite after-school special. There are a lot of them up on YouTube. And you can also find us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast and on Tumblr, StuffMomNeverToldYou.tumblr.com. And, of course, you can get smarter during the week by heading to our website. It's HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.